musicians this Saturday morning at 10 o'clock on WGTD HD.
Support for WGTD comes from the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center. Do you have an advance directive? Trained staff are available to guide you through the paperwork. The service is free and confidential. Call 262-605-6646.
This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive, Marcia Connett, who is a Southeast Regional Consultant for Wisconsin Literacy, and she provides literacy education support and management expertise, and Xander Miller, a librarian at the Kenosha Public Library who also works on technology and digital skills. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 30-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
And welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring. Today we have a two-part program. We will learn about how drones can be used by fire departments and what is being done so Kenosha can purchase one. And then we'll spend some time with Kenosha Habitat for Humanity. We'll learn about new properties coming their way for the families they serve and also efforts to bring a habitat restore to Kenosha. But first, let's welcome Rick Gallo. Sorry about that. Rick Gallo, who is president of the Kenosha AFL-CIO Management Council and also a member of Kenosha's Police and Fire Commission until your term ends in a couple of months. Welcome, Rick.
Thank you, Jane. It's good to be here.
And I think many of us have heard about drones being used in police work and then most recently in war surveillance, but how are they used by fire departments? I have to admit, I hadn't heard that that was a use too.
Yeah, there are actually a lot of potential uses that that we think would be very beneficial to our fire department, not the least of which is for looking for kids, especially by our lakefront. And that's kind of how this whole situation came to light for us. Last July, there was a drowning on the lakeshore. And it just happened that there was a citizen down there that had a drone and offered that to the fire department to help find the missing child. Unfortunately, they found him too late, and a five-year-old ended up dying, in the lake. And, you know, we live in Kenosha, so most people who live here understand the dangers of Lake Michigan and the undertows and riptides and stuff that comes with that. A lot of people come to Kenosha to enjoy our lakefront. They don't necessarily know those things, or, and as you know, we try to get that information out, and we have the life preservers on the pier and all of that good stuff. But people tend to ignore it or think it can't happen to them. And so that's what originally brought the thing to light, because once the bystander put the drone up in the air, the firefighters were able to locate the boy within a matter of a couple of minutes. And they had been searching they were in the water looking for him, couldn't find him with the wave action and the waves churning up the sand and that. So we found that was, very valuable piece of equipment to potentially have. Well, then as we started looking into it, we found that drones can have thermal imaging. So not only are we looking at drones that have a very high definition camera, two-way communication, but also thermal imaging. So visualize a bad fire where firefighters don't know how is the roof safe for them to get up there and vent or to start putting out the fire. They could pop a drone up in the air in a matter of a few seconds and get some thermal images of where the hot spots are on the roof. Is the roof, you know, look like it's intact? And in fact, are there people, you know, you can see heat signatures of people in the building that need to be saved or something like that. So that's just, you know, a sliver of what this this equipment can do.
That really is amazing. And I can see where it'd be so much safer to use a drone rather than sending a firefighter up. And even if you had a ladder truck or whatever, are these just regular drones? I know there are a lot of different. No.
Yeah, there are a bunch of different ones on the market. And initially, when we first put the idea forward that we wanted to purchase a couple of drones, we were thinking, oh, you know, maybe a couple thousand bucks a piece and we can get a couple of them. And as we started looking, you know, well, what features do you want to have? And like the thermal imaging and maybe lights, because if you're using it at night, you want to be able to see what you're looking at, the high def camera, the microphone, so that if, let's say you have a silver alert. So this is where our police and fire, you know, work in tandem. You can pop a drone up and maybe communicate with the person or a lost child and say, are you so-and-so? Can you stay where you are?
We're sending
help, you know, and have that two-way communication. So I think that would be an absolutely nice thing to have. Well, as you start adding these bells and whistles to the drone, and then you also want not one that, you know, it's windy or it's snowing or raining. Oh, well, you know, this little toy is not going to fly. As you start getting a more substantial piece of equipment that can fly in different weather conditions and that has all of these features that we want it to have, then the price goes up pretty significantly and pretty fast. So we found that, you know, the cost can go upwards around the $20,000 range per drone.
Oh. Wow. Okay, yeah. That makes sense, really, given what you wanted to do.
Exactly.
One drone for a city our size just ain't going to cut it, is it?
Well, we would like to be able to provide two of them for the fire department. And like I said, initially, when we first thought, oh, a couple of thousand a piece. And so, you know, $4,000 sounded like a reachable goal and, you know, that we would be able to do. And we left the goal in place, even though the price went up significantly. And I really think that, you know, we're well on our way to being able to hopefully provide two. And, you know, this is something that I think would be, again, very beneficial for our fire department to have. And there's some other potential uses, for example, these things are equipped with GPS, so you can track their flight and know exactly, you know, over what position you are. You could theoretically drop markers that dogs or searchers on the ground could then hone in on and locate. You know, so there's just a whole variety of other features and capabilities that this technology presents.
Well, and as you mentioned, the price tag has gone up, but one of your hats that you wear is with the AFL-CIO, and I understand that you that the council is trying to raise some money.
Yeah, we are basically, you know, throwing out a net and we would like to have, you know, individual contributions, corporate contributions. We have reached out to all of our labor partners and the various locals that belong to our council, and the response has been very supportive. So like we've received contributions anywhere between $20 and $5,000. So, you know, it's kind of heartwarming to see that our brothers and sisters, and especially in the labor movement, are reaching out, but others as well, you know, just individual citizens and corporations too.
So how could an individual citizen, one of our listeners, or perhaps their business get involved with this?
Well, basically they can simply send us a check. And us
meaning AFL-CIO.
AFL-CIO, yeah, made out to the Kenosha AFL-CIO Council. And it just mark in the remarks section a drone fundraising drive, or, you know, drone or something like that, so we know what it's specifically for. You can send it to us. Our address is 3030 39th Avenue, room 121, Kenosha, Wisconsin, 53144. You can also, we have a GoFundMe page. If you simply search for Kenosha AFL-CIO Council drone fundraising, you'll be able to find that. And you can access it that way. And then also for people who may want to make a contribution, but need it to count as a tax deduction, we're kind of working in tandem with the charitable arm of the Firefighters Local, which is Firefighters Care. And you can make your check out to Firefighters Care and send it to us at the AFL-CIO office. And we'll make sure that you get a receipt that you can use for tax deduction and whatnot the same way.
Well, it sounds like very needed, and also that you're doing a great thing for the community. We sure appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah, we're kind of excited about the project, actually.
Oh, you should be. What you mentioned about the drowning, we're almost at that season again, and it's unfortunate. It keeps on happening.
It does, and it is unfortunate, but, you know, we need to provide the best tools available for our first responders, and I think this is a nice step in that direction.
Thanks, Rick. Rick Gallo is the president of the Kenosha AFL-CIO Management Council. And now we're going to turn to Kenosha's Habitat for Humanity. Our guests today are Executive Director Angela Elliott, Habitat Homeowner and Assistant Volunteer Coordinator Janessa Rodriguez, and Habitat Board Member Diane Castella. So I think it's always good to begin with a description of the organization. I find sometimes where I think that, oh, I know all about this, and I'm often surprised by what I hear. So Angela, if you could first begin with a general purpose of Habitat for Humanity.
Sure. Habitat for Humanity, we bring people together to build homes, communities, and hope. And we do that by providing affordable housing right here in our own community.
And how do you go about doing it? I think that's what's really unique. I mean, there are other grant programs or whatever that say we make housing affordable, but you do it in a very unique manner.
Yes, we actually partner with volunteers here in the community. We have volunteers come to our build site to build the homes, and our volunteers don't necessarily have to have even skills. We provide all the training, tools, and whatnot to build the homes, which helps lower the cost of the home build. In addition to that, we partner with local companies and organizations for sponsorships and in-kind donations that help lower the cost of the housing. Once the houses are built, we actually provide an affordable mortgage for those individuals. So they do purchase the home, but it's an affordable rate for them. And what we consider affordable is 30% or less of their income.
Okay. So there's a lot of steps involved, and you made it sound very simple, and I know it is not. So I guess one of the things I want to talk in greater detail about the Habitat approach and the process, but this is a national program, and you're the Kenosha, is the right word, chapter?
Affiliate, yeah.
affiliate. And what are the arrangements with national or those other nearby organizations? Are you all one big happy family? Or when you say affiliate, what's the relationship with national?
Yeah, absolutely. We are partners of Habitat of International, but each affiliate is considered their own organization and their own business, if you will. So we operate very separately, but we do partner, like I'll be with Racine if we're maybe starting an event that is similar. We will partner with them for ideas or resources, but we are separate organizations, and we that means that we're responsible for our own fundraising as well. So some people think that International provides funding for us, and that's just not the case. We actually have to partner with here people here in the community and rely on that support to ensure that we can continue building housing here in Kenosha.
So you don't get money from National, but I know I often get fundraising letters from them. So it really is two different funding organizations.
Yes, absolutely. The funding letters that you probably receive from International, those funds go directly towards their efforts internationally or different programs that they are overseeing or responsible for. The dollars that Kenosha uses here to build affordable housing are actually fundraised right here in Kenosha.
So let's talk about the Habitat approach. That's what I think is so exciting. You had mentioned there are volunteers who are doing the building. You have local people who apply to be homeowners. Kind of walk me through what happens from the start. I know we have Janessa with us today, who is a homeowner, and we'll get some great information from her. But how do you get started?
Yeah, absolutely. We look at three different program criteria when our applicants turn in an application. So for in the very beginning, we have two application periods per year. The first is March 1st through March 15th, and the second one is September 1st through September 15th of every year. We collect those applications, and we really look for three different program criteria. The first is need. All Habitat homeowners have to show that they have a need for housing. We consider a need something like cost burden, maybe crowding, substandard, or just something like that that causes them to have a need for housing. The second criteria we look at is willingness to partner with us. Some people may not know this, but we actually require our homeowners to complete some classes to help them become a better homeowner. They also have to complete sweat equity hours, and that does include the classes, but also volunteering at the build site. So they really come and work on the build site, whether it's theirs or somebody else's home, to help them feel a little bit more comfortable becoming a homeowner. If they were to have repair issues come up or anything like that, they just feel a lot more comfortable. So that's part of our program guidelines as well. And then the third criteria we look at is the ability to pay. So all homeowners must show that they have ability to pay for the mortgage that they're about to signed up for. And so this is something they can prove by showing that they have steady income, good rent or mortgage repayment history, and manageable debt. So once we get the applications, we go through and review all them, look for those three criteria. If we think they may qualify, we actually go to their house and do a home visit and just get to know them and their family, whether that includes kids or other individuals living in the home. And if we think they'd be a good fit, they can start their sweat equity hours right away.
So I know we have a homeowner with us, and Janessa has been through this whole project. Janessa, can you tell me, based on what Angela said, how you moved through the process?
Sure, of course. So I was contacted because I was on the wait list. So years ago, I went on the wait list and I was contacted by a person from the organization to see if I was still interested. So I went through the application process, and soon after, I got a call from Angela saying that my children and I were approved for a home. They did, during the application process as well, they did a home visit, which was great, so they can kind of see my need for housing. At that time, I had a little girl and a little boy, so we were just in a two-bedroom, so there was definitely a need. And then the rental rates were very high where I was. So that need was there, I was able to kind of connect with a few people on the board of directors. They were able to see that. And as soon as I was called by Angela, I kind of hit the floor running with my sweat equity. I was very motivated to be a homeowner and provide a home for my children. So I just knocked out those hours and just was ready for the next steps of getting a home.
You've mentioned sweat equity, and we've heard that same term from Angela, but how were you sweating? Were you hands-on with the building? I know you're a volunteer right now with the organization. Is that a way of making those hours?
Yes. So there's a different criteria that's needed to do sweat equity. So definitely was on the build site. I am still a working mother, so I would do a lot of build site work after work. So I would leave work and get to the build site, and we would do anything from, you know, moving dirt to another location on the property, or putting up walls, or just anything that needed to be done in a home on a build site. So I was there multiple times throughout the week. I would do anything from the Kingfish games to working downtown at the Kenosha Market. So, and working in the office as well. So there are different hours needed to be done in different sections for build and fundraising, or whatever's out there. So I kind of spread my hours around like that.
And when you mentioned the market and Kingfish, I gather that would be the marketing or seeking donations, or at least awareness, right? Doing them.
Correct. Yeah. So there are different things that we do during those. We accept donations. We kind of get our name out there and really just show that we are active in the community as well.
Yeah, Janessa actually got to work for or come volunteer with us at the Kingfish game, because we have a program called Home Runs for Habitat. Snap-on donates $100 for every home run hit. So usually one game per season, at least, we'll go out to the Kingfish game and try to promote Habitat. Snap-on usually does like some sort of jersey auction, and then those funds also come to our program. But we love to have homeowners out during that game. It really puts a face to a house. You know, when people support Habitat, these people at the Kingfish game usually get an informational sheet from us, but then they also get to meet some of our homeowners while we're raising funds. So it's really a fun time.
Oh, I bet. And I hadn't known about that home run program. That's very good one.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fun day. And, you know, we try to get at least one game on the schedule each season. The date hasn't been for sure set in stone yet, but we're tossing around possibly July 3rd is what we're talking with the Kingfish about as our partnership day with Snap-on, where we come out and do that jersey auction and the 50-50 raffle and just really promote Habitat. In addition to our partnership with Snap-on through Home Runs for Habitat.
Well, you've given a really good example of how, as has Janessa, on how you get homeowners involved, those who want to own a home, and how you bring them on board. But I'd like a little bit more information about how you get homes, and whether, I know you do some rehab of older homes as well as building new homes. How does that all work?
We actually have a great partnership with the city of Kenosha. We're very blessed to have a supportive city. They actually give us lots. Some of them are new lots, some are where existing homes were that they maybe had to be demolished for some reason or another. And we build new homes on those properties that they give us to help build up the neighborhoods and communities surrounding that area. We have also done rehabs, and I don't think we've ever paid for a house or a property. We've received a lot of donations of properties from the city, but also a few private individuals as well. So once we get those, we set up a build schedule of which homes we plan to start when. Our goal is to try to start two houses every fall and two houses every spring, so that we're on a constant rotation of homes at different parts of the build schedule and build process, so that we can always welcome volunteers to the build site at any time.
I believe that you have a couple of properties that are moving their way through City Council right now. Isn't that the case?
Yes, we have five properties. We just had a meeting on Tuesday this past week where the city discussed five different properties that are going to be transferred to us, two on 36th Ave north of where we're currently building in Wilson Heights, and then three more over on 50th Street by the Boys and Girls Club. So we are very excited to continue that partnership to help build up these neighborhoods.
That is fantastic. But I would imagine it also puts a little bit of pressure on you, because you can't just start building. You have to have supplies, you have to have volunteers, and five properties, that's a lot, even if you're just doing two in fall and two in spring. How are you, I guess, building your internal capacity in order to meet those opportunities?
Yes, it is a balance. We only have 2.5 staff members. I'm one full-time staff member. We have another full-time staff member named Tom. He's our site manager. He's out at the build site every day overseeing the volunteers. And then we have a part-time person, Amanda, who she helps us with the back-end stuff with like permits and getting bid requests and ordering and things like that for the build site. But besides that, everybody is volunteers, and we are very reliant on those people to come through in order to continue building these affordable homes. So we have committees where individuals are involved with anything from restore to site selection and build to our fundraising teams. We have volunteers that do our planning for the two build weeks we do every year, Community Build Week and Women Build Week. And we have volunteers in all capacities. So we're very lucky and very blessed to have such a willing group of individuals, but we're always looking for more.
Understandable, especially now. I know I have seen some promotions for like Women's Build Week, Community Build. You know, tell me about those.
So Community Build Week, we're actually about to do our second annual one, and we are so excited for it. It's the last week of April, and we plan to do it the last week of April every year. That one is very geared towards individuals who are considered leaders here in our community. We have like the fire department, we have police department, we have Herzing, we have Snap-on and Journey Church all sponsoring the event, in addition to many build groups coming out to the build site. Groups like Thrivent and Go Felicia, one of our local realtors. So we're so excited to have so many leaders come out to the build site during that week, but it's also a fundraising week for us. Normally we don't ask volunteers to donate anything but their time, but this is the one week where we're asking people to give monetarily as well. In addition to Women Build Week, which is the first week of August every year. And that week we really target women to come out to the build site who maybe don't normally feel comfortable in that kind of setting. And we really shine a spotlight on affordable housing as well as empowering women. So that week is another great fundraising week for us. And those are really our two signature events we do every year. We used to do things like 5Ks and golf outings, but we stepped back and we said, you know, a lot of other nonprofits are doing these, and we didn't want to compete with them or add another golf outing if that was not something that was in our wheelhouse. So we stepped back and said, you know, what can we do that no one else can do? And we're like, build weeks. So really pour our effort into those two build weeks every year and know that that's where we're going to get a majority of our fundraising outside of like sponsorships from organizations for the home build specifically.
I do want to talk more about volunteers and how you incorporate them on a daily basis in the builds. But I know there's another aspect, something new for Kenosha's Habitat, and that's the Restore. And that's going to take some dollars and cents as well. I think people have heard of a Restore, but Diane, I believe that this is your baby, correct?
Well, it's the organization's baby, and I'm very excited to be part of it. Restore, people might be familiar with some of the local ones. There's one in Waukegan, there's one in Racine, but a Restore is basically a home improvement store and a donation center. Restores are, they contain items that you might not see in other home improvement stores or home goods stores where people have brought in maybe boxes of tile or other furniture, and they are made available to anyone in the community where they can find a treasure, maybe upscale it, maybe use it to do a bathroom remodel. But what's really important to us is it provides us a source of funding to be able to build homes in the community. Any profit goes towards that mission.
So what is the process for bringing a Restore to Kenosha? I would imagine you need a location. You probably need seed money to get it started, or at least for operations.
Yep. Those, we need both of those things. We're currently in the process of looking at buildings within the community. It's difficult to find commercial property that is the right size for a larger store, as well as an affordable price for us. But we have a great real estate team that's helping us begin to look at properties. We also need to apply to Habitat International to be able to meet their requirements for a business plan and pro forma so they can feel confident branding our store as a Restore for Habitat International. So we're doing local fundraising, we're looking for buildings, and we're working on our business plan.
It sounds like a project.
It is. I really want to mention that there's beyond just providing, we're hoping for 25% of our building costs. There's some real advantages to having a local Restore. We can reduce waste in local landfills. That's been proven throughout the country with other Restores, because we would accept products that the current resale stores, the Goodwills, the St. Vincent's, the Nifty Thrifties, do not accept. And literally people will try to drop them off there and they say, no, we won't take your furniture, we won't take your appliances, and they go right to the dump. So we're trying to keep that out of the landfill. The other thing that we have found is that corporations are literally driving some of their products that they would like to donate to Milwaukee, to Racine, to Waukegan, to keep it out of a landfill. So that's just eating up their energy money, as well as for gasoline and so forth, and also their time. So it enables corporations that would like to, the Ulines, the Amazons, the Snap-ons, the Myers, the Kennels, who might have product that for whatever reason they are not interested in selling in their store, but they would like to donate to us, it gives them that opportunity. And finally, and I think equally importantly, it provides a really low cost option for individuals who are may not be able to afford to go to the Lowe's or the Menards, and yet they can find that home building, home repair project material at an affordable price with interesting things, and it would give us that, all of these things would give us the opportunity to provide Kenosha real service.
It sounds like a wonderful opportunity, but it also sounds like it's a little bit on the daunting side because, to have all those things come together, location, financial support, and then to get all the permitting or whatever you want to call it from the national. And it would be really nice if that all happened at the same time soon, right?
Oh, my gosh, yes. We would adore to have someone come in and say, here, please take this money, take this building and open a restore. We know that's probably not going to happen, but we are still very hopeful that within the next year, year and a half, you'll see a restart here in Kenosha.
Sounds terrific. So back to you, Angela, you know, you've got the fundraising thing going on right now for a restore. As far as supporting the builds and those building supplies, can you talk a little bit about where that either money or supplies come from?
Sure. We do have a partnership with International, like I mentioned before. So some of it comes from International. They have some partnerships with like IKEA, Whirlpool, Valspar, and some other international partnerships that they have where we are able to order those products at a low cost or sometimes donated cost. The rest of it actually comes from local sponsors or local partners that we have. Like Mitchell Carpet's been really good to us. They've given us donations of flooring and or discounted flooring, and they really try to work with us to support us. We have some great contractors who will donate their time. We've got local volunteers who maybe we have a new gentleman who he was a professional painter and now he donates his time to paint with us. And we're just so grateful for some of those partnerships. So some of it comes through service, those in-kind donations, some comes through product donation. And it really does vary house to house. Sometimes it's even based on the homeowner themselves and their personal connections. They may have a connection to a countertop company, or they may have a connection to a landscaping company or something like that. And that helps us to lower the cost of their home as well.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. I really hadn't given it much thought to the homeowner having those connections, but I suppose family members, whatever.
Yes. And the homeowners can actually have 25% of their sweat equity donated. And a lot of times that does come from family and friends who have a specific skill set that can help them not only get their sweat equity hours in from that those donated hours, but then also it helps speed up their build because maybe their uncle has experience in drywall or their cousin has experience in landscaping. Whatever it is, it really helps to bring out friends and family to help move that build process along.
That does sound excellent. Let's talk a little bit about the day in, day out volunteers. We've talked about your build days and you get a whole host of volunteers, but you have somebody who is on the build site all of the time. And that's the one paid person, Tom, you mentioned. So who's with Tom on a day-to-day basis in spring and in fall?
We all year round, we have a group called the Carpenters Club. We call them that. There are extremely dedicated group of individuals, and they're typically individuals who are retired or just have a flexible job in which they can come to the build site on a regular basis. Some come Monday through Wednesday, some come, you know, Monday, Wednesday, or Tuesday, Thursday, whatever their schedule allows, but it's usually on a ongoing schedule and a pretty routine schedule as well. So Tom knows who to expect. So we have about seven individuals who come out regularly. But besides that, we do have a volunteer platform where individuals can sign up to work with the Carpenters Club every single day of the week. So you don't have to be part of a build group necessarily. You just have to be willing to come out and work with the Carpenters Club, who will direct you and really help to just oversee any skill or any project that we're working on that day.
I kind of laugh because one, I've got a fairly significant, I don't know if you call it fear or respect of power tools, and learn this stuff. So I'm sure there are others like me. What could we do? Walk around, pick up nails? I don't know.
We encourage anybody who is just willing to learn or willing to donate their time to come on out, because there's something for everybody. Everyone has skills. We just need to find out what you're good at. If you're very detail oriented, we would love for you to help with finish work. We'll teach you how to use the saw. We'll teach you how to do that finishing work. As long as you have an eye for detail, we'll help you find the right skill and right project for your set of skills. And for us, we're really willing to train anyone. We supply all of the tools. We have all the safety materials, so you don't have to worry about any of that safety equipment or knowing how to work even a hammer. We've had people come out to the build site who have never even picked up a hammer before. And as long as you're willing to learn, we're here to teach you.
It is a great time.
It is. This is Diane as well. I have to say, I did not believe that I knew how to put up siding. I now can say that I have learned to put up siding by siding a good portion of Janessa's garage. They gave me everything I needed to know. It was absolutely the easiest experience I had. And I encourage anybody to try it. You feel like you've really done something of value, and it is really, really a help to a potential homeowner.
Absolutely. As a definitely learned so much through the program. Now that I have a home, I can actually fix things around the home. So it's just a really good opportunity for anyone willing to donate their time and learn. The guys are amazing at walking you through exactly what to do.
That's great. And I would imagine you learn safety as well when you're out there.
Absolutely. They definitely take the time to walk you through the safety portion of it, exactly what you're doing that day, how to do it, and how to execute that project. So everything is very detailed.
Jean, I just wanted to mention the one thing that I'd like to encourage people that may have a job that may be seasonal or part-time. They could come and volunteer for a week in the summer if you're off for the summer. I'm shouting out to all the teachers, librarians, and aides out there. But it's a great experience. They can come alone. They can come with their friends. I would strongly encourage people to try it.
It does sound like a great opportunity to, you know, be nice and helpful aside to actually learn some of these skills that you can then bring to your home.
We actually have several individuals who have come out and said, you know, hey, I'm trying to start a painting company and I just want to get some practice. And we're like, hey, come on out. You can definitely practice on our house. We'll give you some tips. People think that anyone can paint, and it actually there's skill to it. And we want to ensure that individuals feel supported with any project they're doing. And it's pretty simple to sign up to volunteer with us. On our website, it's habitatkenosha.org. And there's a tab for volunteering, and you just click on that. It'll lead you to Volunteer Hub. The first time you fill it out, it takes a few minutes. You do have to put in like emergency contact information and whatnot. But then after that, it's literally one click. You just click the button next to the date that you want to come out, and it'll give you the location, what you're doing for the day. We do ask people to be flexible because like you guys probably know, the projects can change based on supply chain issues, weather, other contractor schedules. So please be flexible, but we do try to put in what project you will be working on for the day so you can be prepared as well.
That does sound, you're making it very easy for people to come and give you a hand and learn something, help others, and be part of this great, really a community redevelopment project.
Well, I'm glad you think it sounds easy, because that's our intent.
Thank you, ladies. I've learned so much about Habitat and your ambitious near-term future plans. We have been talking with Angela Elliott, Janessa Rodriguez, and Diane Kastelic about Habitat for Humanity Kenosha. And you've been listening to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.